Matt Bubala with you here, 720 WGN, filling in for Brian Noonan until 7 o'clock. Hello, Mr. Badish.
Well, hello.
How are you, sir?
I'm doing great. It seems like such a long time since we saw each other.
It's been like 24 hours or more.
Yeah,
but at least it's dark out now, so now I can see you again.
Yes,
that's the rule.
It's now nighttime.
We don't look at each other unless it's pitch blackout.
And you have either another monitor on or another light on down there. I can actually see you now.
I turn on a couple of lights because I have a guest in studio. Normally, I like to sit in the pitch black.
Right. You didn't want him tumbling over the chairs.
True. We've got Dr. Natalie Marks, America's favorite veterinarian, one of the America's favorite veterinarians, at least, in studio with us, along with her two daughters, Sophia and Maddie, have come down to hang out with us. So if we hear a little extra kerfluffle in the background, that's her two daughters hanging out and learning what it's like to be a famous media veterinarian like Dr. Natalie Marks. Hey, Dr. Marks, how are you?
Hi, Matt. Quite the welcome tonight.
Well, thank you for jumping in studio with us. It is, it's been such a freezing week, such a snowy week. And I'm wondering if that, you know, we know that it affects our pets and that, you know, the dogs get the ice balls and the salts can be toxic to them and things like that. But I wonder if there's other things that happen when it's cold outside that that we should be worried about as pet owners.
Well, there's lots of things. I mean, I think you've touched on probably the biggest one, which is if you're cold outside, your pets are usually colder. And the ice that's out, unfortunately, in the city isn't always the safest. So a lot of dogs that are licking their feet and outside kind of what I call kind of toe tapping, where they're putting their feet down and really quickly picking it up. We're very, very concerned that that could be irritating to the soles of their feet, causing a lot of skin infections. But also if it's ingested, it can be toxic. So
There are different types of salts. You can buy pet-friendly ice salts. I know that there's a couple of brands. Safe Step Sure Paws is one of them that are good for your pets and quite honestly for your garden and for coming in on the carpet and things like that too. So we can look out for those.
Absolutely. And that's the one I typically recommend.
Yeah. Okay. What about diseases? Are there any disease states we should worry about? I think we tend to think fleas, ticks, none of that is going on this time of year. Is there anything else that we should be worried about? Dog flu's been a big story. Leptospirosis is out there we're hearing about. Are there things we should still be concerned about even this time of year in Chicago?
Yeah, absolutely. Thankfully, the only good thing about this snow for our pets is that the fleas and ticks are gone from the city because it's been a horrible year. However, all of the wet weather that we're having now, that we're going to have a little bit of a warm up supposedly this week, that allows all of the water transmission diseases to be out there. So the big two that we think about right now would be leptospirosis and Giardia. So it's a bacteria, the lepto is, and Giardia is a parasite, lives in water sources. Our dogs drink it or step in something and then lick their feet, and they can get infections in both. So leptospirosis looks like the flu in dogs. So vomiting, diarrhea, and a fever, and they're not feeling well, usually within a couple days of ingestion. Unfortunately, the big thing to remember about this is that it can be contagious or transmitted to you and your family. It's called a zoonotic disease. Mm-hmm. So we're very concerned about it. It's the most common zoonotic disease out there. There is a vaccine for it, and it's certainly something to be talking to your veterinarian about at your annual exam or if you have concerns. Giardia is a pretty common intestinal parasite around the city, and dogs end up getting pretty nasty diarrhea from it. Also contagious to your family. So if anybody in your house is toddler, elderly, someone who's immune suppressed, they're more potentially at risk for getting sick from Giardia, and we definitely want to be talking to your veterinarian about protecting your pets from that as well.
So that's tough because from time to time our dog is going to have diarrhea or vomit or maybe urinate in the house.
Right.
So how do you know, how quickly do you decide, oh, this is something I better talk to my veterinarian about?
Yeah, it's a great point. I like the pattern of three. Usually something that's significant happens either three times in a day or 3 days in a row. So certainly if your dog has one bout of diarrhea and it seems to firm up the next one and the next day they're fine, I mean, we can chalk it up to potentially something they've picked up on the street and passed through. But if your dog has had three bouts of diarrhea in a day and it's getting worse, or your dog has had 3 days, or in many cases, three clinical signs in a day, like vomiting, diarrhea, and then won't eat, especially our young or elderly dogs or dogs that have other diseases, it's definitely warranted to at least call your veterinarian, and many of them will probably want to see your pet.
And I imagine then, as a general rule, if we have infants or young kids in the house who are crawling on the floor, anytime a dog urinates in the house, you have to clean that up and make sure everybody avoids it and wash up really well. Is it general rules? Should we as pet owners be washing our hands a little more than we do?
We should. Yes, I strongly encourage that, and using appropriate disinfection when there's been a urine accident, because unfortunately, especially with lepto, leptospirosis, that bacteria, when your dog has it, it can shed and will shed in the urine for potentially many days, if it's especially if it's not been diagnosed or treated appropriately. And any toddler crawling around can stick their hand into that urine puddle and potentially, as we know toddlers do, put their fingers directly in their mouth. And that's a possible route of transmission. So yes, anytime there's been a urine accident or a fecal accident, for that matter, cleaning it up right away and everybody washing their hands.
Matt, can I ask a question?
Of course you can.
And this is, you know, about Rufus and my tales of
Rufus.
Him.
Rufus?
Yeah. Rufus, we think, is anywhere from 10 to 14 years old. We got him as a shelter dog. He had a serious kidney infection a couple of years ago, was in for several days, and has had issues ever since. But one of the newest ones that we've seen, and I looked it up and I totally have forgotten the name now, where they're out eating the snow to replace eating grass to help their stomach, their internal organs. I know you've just mentioned how serious that can be, especially if it's been salted and the snow is dirty to start with, even though we think it's clean. What food items might we be able to give Rufus, other than what's been prescribed for his kidney, that might help him get some food inside that will stay inside?
Yeah. Well, you know, kidney patients have pretty specific nutritional requirements, which I'm sure your vet has talked to you about. Mm-hmm. But a couple things that I can think of off the top of my head would be green beans, which are great fillers for dogs, especially for weight loss, but they also like the crunch.
Okay.
And it would be safe for him. Anything that's low sodium. So, you know, a lot of the fruits and veggies that are safe just in general would be safe for him. So any of the green veggies, any of the water fruits, so watermelon, cantaloupe, avoiding grapes, of course. Grapes are super kidney toxic, potentially, in many dogs. So you want to stay away from those in reasons. But apples and carrots. I like air pop popcorn, as long as it doesn't have a lot of salt. Yep, that would be fine for him, too.
Okay.
Yeah, but everything in moderation, of course.
Yeah, definitely.
So it's not a problem that he doesn't want to eat. It's the problem that he doesn't keep it down.
Well, it's not consistent. You just said the rule of threes, and I was starting to think about the rules of three. And like one day, he'll eat up the special kidney hard food and the soft food that we have. But then the next day, he won't go near it. And so I have to put in a dish of my wife has been making rice with some baby food.
Okay.
And he'll eat that up.
Sure.
One day, he has a regular stool, and the next day, he has diarrhea. There's no three in a row with him. Every day is different.
Roger, do you ever give him Pepcid AC?
No, never have.
So that's a really easy thing that many kidney patients require at home, something you can get over the counter, and I can certainly talk to you afterwards and give you the dose. But for many kidney patients, what happens in their body is they have excessive acid production in their stomach, so they get like a feeling like reflux or heartburn, especially in the morning.
Okay.
So many of them eat a lot better if you give them Pepcid AC prior to meals, like 30 minutes before.
Interesting.
And that might get him to eat more consistently.
Okay. The only consistent thing about him is his constant shaking.
Oh.
He will be lying and shaking. He will be standing and shaking. And sometimes we think he's having like mild seizures, like he suddenly stiffens up. And we don't know what's wrong, and then all of a sudden he'll start walking. So, and we think it's stemming from the kidney. We took him into the vet about 4 months ago.
Okay,
and we're told that the best thing we could do is put him through a battery of tests so they can get a better understanding. And we just didn't think it was something he'd want to go through. So I don't know. I don't know how many other people, other listeners, have animals or at least dogs that have those conditions. But
I think a lot do. You know, kidney disease and chronic kidney disease is one of the most common things we see, and a lot of it is just related to age. Which just sounds like you've done such a wonderful thing by adopting a senior pet. They need love more than any of them, I feel like. So it's good that you're talking to your veterinarian, and certainly most important thing is the quality of life that you can provide for him within your means and what you believe in. So
Thanks.
Yeah, you're welcome.
312-981-7200 is the number. Dr. Natalie Marks is in studio with us. If you've got a question, we've got a couple other topics to cover, including Valentine's Day is coming up this week, and that could be dangerous for your dogs and your cats. We'll tell you why next. 720 WGN. Just whispered in my ear as if I'm not already ancient. A song by Bow Wow. Yes, I know I want Candy by Bow Wow. I am 110 years old. Jess, you don't have to tell me that. Thank you, though. I appreciate you whispering that in my ear. Oh, Bow Wow. Okay. That was the tie-in to the pet segment.
It's very cute. And you are older than I am.
I am older than you are, Dr. Marks. Although, Sophia, how old am I? You shout it out. How old? 28. Thank you very much, Sophia, my favorite of the Marks family. Dr. Natalie Marks is in studio with us. 312-981-7200. 630 texted, I have raccoon issues. Should I be careful around the fecal areas?
Very much so. So there's a parasite that raccoons shed in their poop called Bacillus ascaris. It's a roundworm of raccoons. And so we talk about roundworms of dogs and cats all the time. And that's why you should be giving a heartworm preventative every month to your dog. It should really be a parasite preventative, but it protects your dogs from picking up these intestinal parasites around the city and transmitting them to you. The raccoon roundworm, again, it's called Bacillus ascaris, is very, very scary to people. If your child is out there and gets into a pile of contaminated area and puts their hand in their mouth and has that possible transmission, that roundworm can go into the eye or the brain, and it can cause a lot of scary disease in children. So raccoons, although I'm sure lovely animals, need to be away from your backyard and not be feeding them. And if there is an issue, certainly talk to your alderman or the city and see about how we can safely move those animals into a different area.
Or if you're in the suburbs and you have that going on, because we have a ton of wildlife in the suburbs, and you know that should we be out picking that up as adults? If we have kids in our yard and there's only so much we're going to do to control where their hands go,
right?
Should we be picking that up and getting it out of the yard and trying to clean up that area?
Yes, but we'd be doing that very safely with gloves on and washing your hands.
And then what should we do? So if that was in my mulch that I saw that and I picked that up, do I then try to wash that down? Are there solutions you should be buying for your backyard for areas like that?
To be honest, I don't know what the best one is for raccoon feces. But what I would definitely say is that if you have kids that are playing in the backyard, that should not be an area that they go frequently, because Bacillus ascaris is a very big concern for parasites in kids.
So it's probably not just enough to pick it up. Probably want to do something to try to avoid having raccoons in your backyard in the first place.
Absolutely.
If you can, right?
Yes. Prevention's the best medicine.
Okay. 312-981-7200 is the number. And I want to ask you about Valentine's Day, because that's coming up this week. Maddie is here in studio with us. Natalie Mark's daughters, Sophia and Maddie are here. And Maddie has something to say, because she's... How old are you, Maddie? 4? Or are you 5?
5.
She's 4.
Five.
She's 4.
5.
Going on 5 quickly, though, right?
Absolutely.
Okay, Valentine's Day is coming up, and we always know that chocolate is an issue for dogs. And with all the candy we're going to have around the house and be giving to each other, how worried should we be about that?
Well, it is a big concern. So, you know, chocolate has a toxicity level that varies depending on the type of chocolate and the weight of your dog. But just like we were talking with your new puppy, there's a lot of things that we want to keep away from dogs around this time of year. And chocolate and anything that's been baked is one of them. So if for some reason your dog gets into something, especially if you know that your dog's gotten into candy bars or any baked goods, it's really important to talk to your veterinarian right away. We'll give you some options to try and induce vomiting at home, because we want to get that out. If we can't get that out at home, then we definitely want to see your dog so that we can decontaminate and make sure that we don't have the toxicity that can arise from that.
All right. Dave has a question about feeding your dog certain things. Dave, you're on 720 WGN with Dr. Natalie Marks. What's your question?
Yes, doctor.
Hi,
good
Dave.
Evening.
Hi, good evening.
Hi. I've been feeding my dogs. We've got 2 dogs now, and I like to try to get them to eat at the same time.
Yep.
So I've been mixing in a teaspoon of low-fat yogurt.
Okay.
Like peach yogurt in with their dry food, mixing it real good, but only a teaspoon at a time, which gets them to eat real good.
Okay.
At the same time. But I'm wondering, is it all right to give them a teaspoon of yogurt each feeding?
Absolutely.
Too much sugar.
Oh, no. No, absolutely. So dogs, thankfully, don't usually have lactose intolerance problems. And a lot of times we will use cheese or other dairy products for training purposes or as tempters or like you're doing to try and get them on a same feeding schedule. So as long as their stools are normal and they're eating well and they're happy, I think that's perfectly fine. Just no grapes, right? Yeah.
The what?
We want to avoid anything that has grapes or raisins in it, okay?
No, I've been giving them a peach and, or maybe vanilla or, you know, something low fat.
Sounds great.
But just a teaspoon at a time.
That sounds perfect.
All right, Dave. Thank you so much for checking in. We appreciate it. One other thing with, you know, yogurt could be a very natural food or it could be a processed food. And I know I've heard Steve Dale talk about xylitol is a sugar substitute. So if that were in that yogurt, that would be very well. How would that affect the dog?
Well, yeah. So xylitol is a really, I would say, fairly common human sugar substitute now that we find in some of the organic food stores.
Sure.
But xylitol in some instances, especially in heavy amounts, like if your dog gets into Orbit gum and eats a whole pack of gum, that xylitol can go and cause actually a very significant drop in blood sugar and also sometimes in very severe instances, liver failure. Mm. So I would think in the instance for Dave where he's feeding just a teaspoon, it's probably fine. I can't imagine that would be that much. But the big thing that we see with toxicities is dogs that get into people's purses or bags and eat a whole thing of gum. That's the usually the most common presentation.
Okay. Michelle has got, as long as we've been talking about poop and all the diseases that are transmitted, why don't we stay on the subject? Because everybody having generous
see poop
so happy
every
with
day.
Me. Michelle, you're on 720 WGN. How are you tonight?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. What's your question for Dr. Natalie Marks?
So I have a 80-pound German Shepherd. He is just over a year. He is eating feces. He's eating his own feces. He's eating my older dog's feces. My veterinarian gave me some type of powder to sprinkle on his food, thinking that that would stop it, and it just hasn't. So I'm not sure, is that normal, other than gross, what can be done?
Yeah, that's a great question. It happens a lot, especially in younger dogs, and it's not technically normal to be eating his own stool in other dogs' stool. So a couple questions I guess I would have first for you, and I'm sure you probably talked to your vet about this, is one, is he growing appropriately? Are his stools normal or are they soft? Is he having any other GI signs? Okay, because German Shepherds, especially in that breed, they can have a disease called EPI, which is where they don't make enough digestive enzymes in their pancreas. And a lot of them are slow growers or they don't really fill out like you might see another German Shepherd filling out or another large breed dog. But they tend to have pretty, lack of a better term, cow pie stools. So kind of just
He's a beast. He's pretty hefty.
He's a big guy. Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So is he having any GI signs at all?
No, his poop seems to be normal and large, and you know, at first we thought, because my other dog is, he's 15, mm-hmm. elderly, blind, you know, we thought that he was eating the little guy's stool to protect him, because we were reading that, but it's just not stopped.
It's not stopped, yeah. So I don't know what your veterinarian prescribed. I don't know if it's something like Forbid or Deter. These are...
Yes, Forbid.
Okay. That sounds right. Yep. So Forbid will help your dog potentially not eat his own stool, but it won't help with other dog's stools, if that makes sense. Unless you feed it to both of your dogs, it might help. So there are some behavioral things that you could try. The other thing, though, to consider is if he has something called pica, which is an appetite for things he shouldn't have, like stool. So I would revisit with your veterinarian and just explain to them that it's not working, the Forbid. Like I said, there's other things like Deter and Coproban. So sometimes if one doesn't work, another one might. So I wouldn't give up on that totally. But the other thing might be just, again, to revisit, have a good exam, make sure that you have a a current negative fecal sample, that there's no parasites that he's picked up causing him to have this sort of abnormal appetite for things he shouldn't be eating, and maybe even just some routine blood work to make sure that there's nothing else going on.
Thank you so much for the call, Michelle. Real quick, we've got to get to the news, but the flu is going around like crazy among yes. humans. My kids' school, they came within like 8 kids of being sick for them to cancel the entire school day altogether. So it's going around in humans, but we're hearing a lot and a lot of dog flu going around. Yes. What's the concern? Should we be getting vaccinated? When do you know? How do you talk to your veterinarian about that?
Yeah, so it's in almost every state now. It's also in Canada. The dog flu came over, as we know, in 15 from South Korea, and unfortunately has sort of had an outbreak amongst the nation. So kind of a quick rundown. If your dog is active in the community, so grooming, boarding, daycare, agility, live in a very communal dog building, you go to dog parks, dog runs, your dog is exposed. Dog flu looks like a similar to the flu in people. It's a pretty high fever most of the time, a pretty intense cough, sometimes vomiting because they're coughing so much and not eating, tends to come on pretty quickly. If your dog is experiencing any of these signs at home, you should definitely talk to your veterinarian, within the same day, because they'll want to talk to you about some strategies to help them feel better. There is absolutely a very effective vaccine for dogs. There's actually one now that's called a bivalent, which means it has both the old strain of flu and the new strain of flu. So if your dog is communal, you should be talking to your veterinarian about those risks and if the vaccine is right for them.
And find out if it's in your area, right?
Yes. It's endemic in Chicago. Yeah. What that means is it sort of now lives here. It's not causing outbreaks like it did because a lot of our dogs have been exposed to it. But it is still around and we are still seeing cases.
Excellent. Dr. Natalie Marks at Blum Animal Hospital, just a couple blocks south of Wrigley Field. Thank you so much for coming in today.
Thanks,
Matt. Thank you, Maddie and Sophia. Thanks for being so good. We appreciate you guys coming in. All right.